Kristen, we've got a lot of ground to cover this week, and we have a lot of questions to ask this week about the three big releases. The Expendables, the new action film.
Why was it made?
Okay. All right. That's one. Don't play your cards so quickly now. Come on, Kristen. Now I know how you feel about it already.
I didn't say that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay.
I might be totally playing you right now.
Yeah. You're totally playing me, Kristen. So the question I think for the Expendables, Stallone, Schwarzenegger, Willis, Norris, Van Damme.
The whole AARP team.
The whole AARP action team. Will this be a hit along the lines of the original Expendables, the Expendables 2? So there's that. For the guys, for the kids, there's Paranorman. I would call this a children's horror movie.
I would call it that, too.
Yes. And
my question is, can children handle a horror movie?
Are children going to turn out for this film? That's my question on that one as well. And then last but not least, Sparkle, the last performance of Whitney Houston in a musical drama. This was supposed to be her big comeback, and I think the question there is, would it have been, given her performance, given the singing that she does in the film, would this actually have been her
big
comeback?
Is she smiling down from heaven or rolling over in her grave?
Right, exactly.
What would Whitney think?
Exactly.
Well, we have a lot to talk about, but before we do that, let's introduce ourselves. I'm Kristen Meinzer, producer for The Takeaway.
And I'm Rafer Guzman, movie critic for Newsday, and this is Movie Day.
All right, Rafer, before we talk about this week's movies, let's start by talking about last week's trivia question.
Yes, okay, last week's trivia question in honor of Hope Springs, the Meryl Streep, Tommy Lee Jones romantic comedy drama.
It.
Yeah, which you
loved.
I'm just getting
very emotional thinking about it.
I liked the movie as well. We both liked it. So we had a Meryl Streep question, which was, what early career Meryl Streep film cast her as the mistress of a politician? This was early on in her career, and lo and behold, someone got it right. Steve from New Jersey.
Hello, guys. This is Steve Randall calling from North Plainfield, New Jersey, in answer to your very hard trivia question about the early Meryl Streep movie in which she played the mistress of a politician. I believe the movie is The Seduction of Joe Tynan, starring Alan Alda.
Oh, Steve, you totally
Bingo.
Got that.
Bingo, on the money.
Steve totally got that. And you know what, Steve? I also have to agree with you. This was a super hard question, and I didn't know what the answer was.
I didn't think it was that hard, but
it was really hard. Right?
I'm glad Steve got it. I also want to say this puts Alan Alda played the politician in that movie. That puts Alan Alda, I think, in very good company as leading men who have made out with Meryl Streep. Not bad,
you're
Alan.
You're jealous, aren't you?
I am jealous. All right, so Kristen, in honor of Whitney Houston, you have a trivia question that you came up with.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about Sparkle later, and we wanted to talk about Whitney Houston's movie career. Now, she's only been in a few movies. You can count them on one hand,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
But she was offered lots of movies. She was considered for lots of movies. Which Oscar-winning movie role did she turn down because she didn't want to appear in the nude?
It's a great question. I love this question.
Yeah, and if you know the answer, call 5717 movies or facebook.com/moviedatepodcast.
All right, so let's get to the Expendables 2, Kristen.
Your favorite movie.
My favorite movie.
And mine.
Incoming chopper! We gotta get this thing out of here!
You got any ideas?
That's all I'm asking you!
Well, I'm asking you!
All right, so...
No, it's not.
No, it's not. It's not, is it, your favorite
movie?
But
it might be. You don't know. I'm totally teasing you. Look at me. I'm totally gaming you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You've got your game face on.
Look at that. Rafer's lit.
I have no idea what she's thinking. Okay, so let's give a brief summary, if that's even possible, of The Expendables 2.
Such an intricate plot.
All right, so you've got, I guess the summary is sort of, as with the first Expendables in 2010, the summary is really just the cast list, right? As we said, in addition to all the guys that we named before, you've also got Jason Statham, Jet Li.
Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Jean-Claude Van Damme is in it. Randy Couture, Terry Crews. Yunnan as Maggie. The first female Expendable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's only been two films, but she's the first female Expendable. Mm-hmm. And Liam Hemsworth as the newcomer, as the new young buck, Billy the Kid.
Yeah, also known as Mr. Miley Cyrus.
That's right. I bet he loves being called that. I know I would. So the plot, basically, they are trying to, what are they trying to do?
They're
trying
shoot to things, chase, yell.
That they do. But I think they're trying
drive
to get,
fast.
They're trying to get blueprints for an old Russian nuclear stockpile, which is a nice throwback to the Cold War in the 80s.
Oh, there's so much plutonium right now under the ground.
A plot everyone in that film is probably used to in their movie careers. Things go wrong. One of their own, let's not spoil it, one of their own is killed. And then they embark on a mission of revenge. So here's my question to you, Kristen. How'd you like it? How'd you like The Expendables 2?
Oh, gosh. It was just chock full of magic moments. Remember when early on they take down that helicopter with a motorcycle?
Yes. That happens in the first 60 seconds or so of the film.
Remember great lines like, you've been terminated. And I've got your gangbang right here.
Mm-hmm. And as Schwarzenegger says to Willis, I'll be back. And Willis says, you've been back enough.
Let's not forget, rest in pieces.
Rest in pieces. I now pronounce you Man and Knife from Jason Statham. Oh, we could go on.
Oh, God.
All right.
Who writes this stuff?
A guy named Sly Stallone.
Oh, so good.
Co-writer, I think, on this. Okay.
Remember, he won an Oscar for writing at one point. Let's not forget.
Oh, rub it in, Kristen. All right. I'm going to say... First, I want to hear what you say. What's your actual honest opinion?
Okay, my actual honest opinion is I didn't hate it.
Oh, no kidding.
No, I just wanted it to be dumber. I felt that they were afraid to really go all the way with the dumbness. I feel that...
Now, that's interesting.
They could have gone much further. They could have had more dumb lines. They could have had more helicopters being taken down by motorcycles. They could have... I mean, I think it should have taken it further. I think it should have been stupider. And... it was stupid, but not stupid enough for my taste.
Now, okay, that's interesting because my complaint on this film is exactly the same as the first film, that it doesn't take itself seriously at all, and so why should I? And plus, I don't think the film is ever, ever funny. The lines in this film, the dialogue in this film, just like in the first one, are so bad that I don't even understand who thought that they were trying to make some kind of a joke.
Didn't you just say Stallone did?
I guess, okay. All right, I stand corrected. But there's some line where as Jason Statham as Lee Christmas and Stallone as Barney Ross are bickering, as they do, and Jason Statham says something like, Stallone says, I've got a big yoo-hoo, me? And Statham says, your ego's like the size of a dinosaur. Huge. And I just thought, what kind of line is this? Take that line out. That's not the line you leave in the movie. My problem with this
only
movie...
Only an Oscar winner could write that.
Only. I feel like these movies are so lazy and sloppy and stupid and jokey and not funny jokey that there's no excitement, there's no thrills, there's just nothing for me to grab onto in this film except, weirdly enough, Jean-Claude Van Damme, the best actor in the entire film, as the villain, whose name is Villain. But I think he's the only person who seems to be actually trying in this film, and everyone else is just kind of lazing, joking, lounging their way through this movie, and that just bums me out. I wanted it to be more serious.
Really? That's so... How could this possibly... All right. I don't understand why.
All right. So I say bad date.
I'm going to say bad date... but not the worst date.
Okay.
I just wanted it to be a stupider date.
Talk about faint praise. All right, so so Kristen, take us into Paranorman.
I've been holding back the witch's curse for years, but now I'm dead. It has to be you.
But I don't know what any of it means.
It means the past is coming back to haunt you.
Paranorman. It's a stop-action movie, stop-action animation, with a boy named Norman.
Norman.
Who, much like The Sixth Sense, he sees dead people.
Yes, he talks to the dead.
Yes, he does. And he lives in some sort of almost Salem, Massachusetts town,
right,
which has a history of burning witches and... It's the 300th anniversary, I believe, of one of the famous witch burnings.
Oh, you counted. That's pretty good. I didn't do that part. Good for you. Okay.
I think that's what it is.
I think you're right.
And along with this anniversary...
A witch's curse is descending on the town.
Yeah, and Norman, of course, can talk to this witch. And as you said earlier, it's a children's horror movie.
Yes, it's ghouls, zombies overrun the town. There's a scene where the townsfolk... are pick up torches and pitchforks and are storming a library where the zombies are and also some shivering children inside. A lot of very gruesome humor.
Parts that are animated but not attached to other body parts.
Yes.
Fires.
Corpses, dead animals. Fires. Now... What did you think, Kristen? Did you feel like did you enjoy the film just from your own personal perspective?
You know, after mentioning all those explosions and zombies and so on, it makes it sound as though this is a fast, action-packed movie, but I actually felt that it was a little bit slow.
It's a little draggy, yeah.
Yeah, it didn't have enough snap to it. I wanted it to be much snappier, to move at a pace more like Toy Story pace.
Right.
And then...
Probably hard to do with stop motion.
But I
do agree that the comedic timing was just, there was sort of a little beat behind for each joke.
Yeah, it just seemed a little bit slow to me. And then... Another issue, I thought it was too scary.
It's really scary.
It's terrifying. I'm like, this movie is way too scary.
Yeah.
Even for a lot of grown-ups, I think this movie is too scary.
Yeah.
And definitely too scary for kids.
It's interesting because I think it's very nicely animated, and visually there are parts of it that look really good. Again, without spoiling too much, the final sequence of the film where Norman kind of discovers what's behind the witch's curse... and tries to repair that and faces down the demon, let's say, I found not just like visually kind of jarring and frightening and overwhelming, but also kind of emotionally harrowing.
Very much so.
It's a hell
very
of a story
so.
that Norman discovers, and really kind of just really awful and shocking and full of, you know, regret and sin and, damnation and all these really heavy things.
But I do have to say that last 5 minutes of the film was my favorite part.
Yes, mine too. It's a great sequence.
Because everything up until then, it's not quite snappy enough. It's supposed to be, you know, telling a story, but mostly it's just not fully doing it. And then at the end, the whole story just explodes and you kind of learn everything. And it's so... It really hit me.
Yeah, it gets kind of sort of Jacob's Ladder Wicker Man territory. But I mean, again, the problem is
Reefer
that it's...
Reefer Guzman says it's just like Jacob's Ladder.
Take the kids. Fun for the whole family. That, I think, is the problem. It's really just not going to be fun for the whole family. And I just don't understand who the audience is going to be for that, aside from, say, animation fans over the age of, say, 13. I think anyone like 9 or younger is going to be pretty freaked out by the film.
Is it rated PG?
It's rated PG, yeah.
Oh, no, it should be PG-13. I might agree.
I might agree.
Oh, it's too scary. So
I would say an okay date, as long as it's you and an adult and there's no child.
I have to agree. It's kind of a scary date, and it's a fine date, not a great one.
All right.
Fine. But let's move on to the movie that everybody is really, really talking about this week. Whitney Houston, Sparkle.
I made it very simple in this house. Respect, getting an education, and having a relationship with the Lord. If you can't do that, then go.
Why would the Lord give me this gift if I wasn't supposed to use it?
All right, so Sparkle, shall we call it the swan song of Whitney Houston?
I mean, it definitely is. Kristen, do you want to give the summary of this?
Yeah, we have Whitney Houston as the matriarch. She has three daughters. They live in kind of an upper-class Detroit neighborhood.
Yeah.
And Whitney Houston's character is somebody who tried to have a singing career at one point. It didn't work out. She ended up somehow a single mom with three daughters who all want to have singing careers of their own. And
alcohol problems, interestingly enough.
Yes. Oh, yeah. She does, in the movie, seem a little bit like those aren't in the past.
Yes.
And then we have lots of lines she's delivering, like, don't make the same mistake as I did, girls.
Yes, was my life not enough of a cautionary tale for you? Yeah, a lot of these interesting lines from her.
Yeah, and the three daughters, the main one, the one who plays Sparkle, is played by Jordan Sparks from American Idol fame. People mm-hmm. who are fans of American Idol might remember that she's the youngest person ever to win American Idol. She was only...
Oh, yeah, she's 17. Yeah, is that right?
She was just a kid back
then. I forgot about that. Yeah,
and she's still a kid. I think she's only like 21 right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, right.
She's really, really young.
That's a kid for you and I, Kristen.
To us it is.
A whippersnapper.
And then she has her two sisters, and the three of them make this singing group together.
One we should sister... say it's 1968, by the way. Oh, so it's sort of, it's Motown era Detroit, and they're trying to be kind of the next Supreme.
Yes, yes. And one sister goes by the name Sister.
Sister.
And one sister goes by the name Dee. And these are girls who are raised to be ambitious, to try hard, to have successful careers.
But respectable ones, not that show business
no,
drama.
No, no. You can sing at church, but don't sing for a living and then be a doctor and don't be like Mom. So
right.
That's pretty much it right there.
Yeah.
Lots of singing in it. And actually, oh, something else I should point out. This is a remake of another movie called Sparkle.
Right, from 1976.
Yes.
Which that movie was set in Harlem in 1958. So this one kind
yes.
of bumps it up about 10 years later into Detroit. One thing I wanted to mention, the 1976 movie had Irene Cara in the lead role.
Oh, what
as,
a feeling.
As Sparkle. What a feeling. And probably its best attribute is an original score and songs by the great Curtis Mayfield.
Oh, so great.
Many of which,
love that Curtis
a handful of which are in this new version as
which
well.
Which I'm so happy about.
Yeah.
I was afraid that some of those songs might just disappear.
Right, right. Well, R. Kelly was the executive musical consultant on this film, so
and
he's a Mayfield fan.
Oh, R. Kelly. Let's not get into R.
All right,
Kelly.
Let's not go there.
That's a whole other podcast.
Let's not talk about that. Okay, so I think the first thing we should touch on is that Whitney Houston's role is actually very small. It's a supporting role as mm-hmm. as the mom.
This is really Jordan Sparks' movie.
Yeah, it's Jordan Sparks' movie, and I would say it's the movie really belongs to Carmen. I think her name is pronounced Ejogo.
Yeah, she's a Nigerian American.
Nigerian British.
Or Nigerian British. Yeah.
And kind of I think fairly well known in England, mostly for television stuff. I think maybe I read somewhere that she had her own show for a while, but not well known in America at all. And I think, even though she's been in some small roles, I think this is going to be really her big introduction to America. And I have to say, she plays the troubled
of
the three sisters. She plays the star, but also the troubled one who gets into drugs, marries the wrong man. And
she's already been down the wrong path a few times.
Right. She's a bit of a Diana Ross / Billie Holiday combo. I think the movie kind of belongs to her. I think she's really extraordinary in this role.
Can I just say she's also just gorgeous?
Oh, she's totally beautiful. Yeah.
I mean,
my
all
God.
Three of the daughters are actually
yeah.
just unbelievably gorgeous.
Yeah.
I think she and the one who plays Dee, I think, are both former models.
Oh,
and,
is that right?
Yeah.
Oh. And she was really good too, and a much bigger and more complicated role for her than they gave her in the original movie. I don't know if you've seen the original, Kristen, but I saw that movie, and it's like this really, it's a really well-intentioned movie, but pretty amateurishly made and pretty sloppy and pretty crudely put together.
Was it as bad as Dreamgirls?
It was not as bad as
Dreamgirls.
It's not like that, but it's you know, you can feel the kind of budgetary constraints and I think just some generally inept filmmaking, although it was written by Joel Schumacher of St. Elmo's Fire fame.
Wow.
So it does have, although even the script is a little rocky as well, but I felt like with this movie, there was this sense that, you know, that movie has kind of a cult following, I think, mostly among, you know, largely among black audiences. It's better known. And I think there's a lot of love for that movie. And I think there was this feeling like the people who made this movie wanted to do it right and sort of do that story some real justice. And I have to say, I think they really did. I really liked this
movie.
Yeah, I really did.
I am so surprised, Rafer.
I know. I was
so
not expecting
surprised.
Much.
When we were sitting in the screening last night and people were cheering and amens and all the yelling at Whitney for being to this or that daughter for being to that.
Right.
All I could think is, I know Rafer's just rolling his eyes right now. I know Rafer is just thinking, why am I sitting through this malarkey.
And but I was thinking, Kristen just must be in hog heaven right now. Kristen Kristen must just be thinking, how did I get so lucky?
Oh my God, I was.
Were
I
you?
Really was.
Ah,
yes.
So you liked it too. You liked
oh,
it too.
I love loved it. But first of all, you know I'm a sucker for any movie that or story in general that takes place in the 1960s. That's,
sure.
That's an era that I just love.
And about and with singing.
I'm a sucker for anything with singing. I'm a sucker.
And about a girl chasing her dreams.
Oh, God, oh! I love a girl chasing her dreams. I just love it. Girls need to chase their dreams. And, you know, I'm just so glad that Whitney Houston got to have a moment in this movie also. There is a solo she has.
She does a gospel number near the end of the film. It's stunning.
And the whole audience clapping and whistling.
They did. People applauded like she was there in the theater. It was incredible. It's a great, great number. It was really, really spine-tingling, I have to say.
It was like the old Whitney was back again.
It really was. Beautiful. Just, the number is so, her singing is so raw and powerful. God, it's great. It's a great number in that movie. But the screenwriter, my hat is really off to her because she took, I think, a lot of that raw material in the original film and really like sharpened those characters and made them much more complex and gave them much more believable motivations. One interesting thing is the character of Satin.
Satin is great.
Yeah, Satin's great. Mike Epps plays Satin.
Because he's kind of a douche in some ways, but in other ways, I totally think he's smarter than everybody else in the room. Mm-hmm. He's not just a bad guy, mm-hmm. and he's not just a good guy.
And he has a lot of interesting ideas about race and religion that are very complicated and that seem like they could be very real things that a black guy might be thinking in 1968. In the original film, he's just your typical, woman-beating drug lord guy. He's nothing like what they've made him into in this movie, and I think it really works, works really well. And then I think also Derek Luke as Styx, the guy who manages the group, is pretty good as well.
Yeah, I mean, his role's not as meaty, but no. He still does very well with what he has.
Yeah, he's got the kind of nice guy role. But I think the screenwriter and I think the director, I think, does a really good job. I think the costumes look really good.
Oh, the costumes are so great.
I think the numbers are great, and I have to, and again,
the music's good.
The music is good. I R. Kelly, musical consultant.
Oh, we're going back to R. Kelly again.
You know, I think he did a really
that
good
man
job
is
of.
Trouble.
I know he is, but he knows his music, and he really did a good job of updating some of those Curtis Mayfield numbers that they sound kind of. They still have that great Motown feel, but they also sound a little more lush and kind of modern and appealing. It's a great little balancing act, I think he did with some of those musical numbers. But I like the film quite a bit.
I am in shock.
I am too, believe me.
I can't believe it.
All right,
I can't believe it. Good date for me. I thought it was a great date. Thought it was a great date.
All right.
If I could cozy up to this date and spend all night with it, I would. I love this date. This was great.
I'm glad to hear it.
It was good stuff. And you liked it too.
And I liked it too.
I still don't believe you.
I did. I'm telling you the truth. Why would I lie? Why would I lie about Sparkle?
I don't know why you would do it, but maybe you and R. Kelly are in cahoots. I don't know. I have no idea. All right. Let's remind everybody of the trivia question.
Yes.
All right. So Whitney Houston, she was offered a role that went to someone else who won the Oscar for it. She turned it down because she did not want to appear in the nude. What movie is it? Call us at 5717movies or log on to facebook.com/moviedatepodcast.
So much love for us, it seems. So much hope for material things. Are they only in my dreams?
Did you know that you can follow Movie Date on Twitter and Facebook? You can also give us feedback on the podcast and tell us what movies you want us to see next.
Log on to themoviedate.org to find out more. And thanks so much for listening.